You are listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. Join him as he and his guests discover how businesses thrive in California.
Well, welcome to The Pilgrim on the 405. We are really blessed today to be interviewing and spending some time with a fellow who has just done so much for other people. It's really astounding and it's inspiring, and I want to get Steve Bender to talk a little bit about how he organizes his resources, his time, his day. Now, Steve has been unprecedented. For 2 years, was the president of the Newport Beach Sunrise Rotary Club, and in the process of that has created a number of very significant projects. In fact, significant enough to catapult him into the exalted position of vice president for the District of Rotary for international projects. So welcome, Steve. Welcome to Pilgrim on the 405.
Okay, I want to correct you. I'm not the vice president. I'm the chair of the international, of the 45 clubs.
Well, that's only for today. I mean, who knows? Tomorrow, they'll have to rename it as vice president. Super. Well, welcome, Steve. Tell us a little bit, Steve, about where your passions are.
Well, you know, I grew up on a farm in Kansas, and I think I've told you this before. We were raising organic beef before they called it organic. We just knew not to put the bad stuff in the cows. But I was fortunate enough to my father was a Boy Scout leader, and my mom was a Girl Scout leader. So they taught me all about community service at a very young age, and given me that passion for philanthropy, as well as teaching youth to get involved young and reinforcing them when they're young. And that's worked really well through a lot of the projects we've done with Rotary, the Dock in the Box specifically.
Well, now, tell me how you got from Kansas. Now, I know you didn't just click your shoes together and exit Kansas. How did you get to Southern California?
Well, via Aspen, I left Kansas and did a little ski patrol thing, that drives your parents crazy for the first year, and then ended up going down, living in the Virgin Islands for about almost 15 years. So I got into the wine distribution and marketing down there and really enjoyed it. But as my mother started getting ailing, I was only allowed to leave, twice a year for vacations, and mom being in Kansas. And when she got sick, I moved back to Kansas for about 6 months to take care of her. Mm-hmm. So I had to give up that job and move to the United States.
Then you're still in Kansas, so?
Then I started one of the first microbreweries. This is back before anybody else was doing it. We were
microbrewery, right?
No. It was a regular. It was just a straight microbrewery. But that was in the 90s, and I was fortunate enough to win the California Beer Festival Best American All Malt Lager. Oh. I said I've only entered one beer contest and got a gold medal. So I said, I'm done.
So now, where did you live to do the
beer? That was still Kansas. And then actually, that's what brought me to California, all my customers. I was coming out here a lot. And I just moved from the Virgin Islands, and I go, I can live anywhere I want. I don't really have, I don't have a wife, children, or anything that'll keep me anywhere. And I love Newport Beach, and I settled here. There was some really good, my best clients were in Orange County, because that was right at the beginning. When was this? This was back in 1993, 94. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And, you didn't have 57 breweries in the county. You had none. And we were a little ahead of our time there.
So when you won the gold prize for being the best, were mm-hmm. you also the only?
Yeah, actually, I was. Well, no. No, at that time, there were probably 50 breweries from around the country.
Good.
San Diego picked up on it before Orange County did, and Northern California has been heavy in the microbreweries.
All right, so here you are doing a brewery, a microbrewery. And 93. Mm-hmm. So what's between 93 and 2017?
Well, I was really liking doing the beers, and I was releasing some different beers. And then I also started making wine, and I was trademarking things. I trademarked Millennium Merlot in 1995, knowing that it would be a popular brand in 2000. But at that time, there was just such a wait, because you'd wait maybe 2 or 3 months to get label approval from the alcohol. Back then, it was alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. It was pre-9/11, where they changed to Homeland Security. So I found a lot of downtime where I had nothing to do. And I noticed, you know, the market was really, really hopping with real estate. So I started my own a mortgage company, so called Sea to Sky Mortgage, mm-hmm. and then started a real estate company called Newport Homes. And was really, you know, that was a great time to be in that industry up until about 2007. And it was, you know, a very good time.
All right. So where did this philanthropy start?
You know, I think it started at a very young age because we always joked we were the children of friends. My mom was Friends of the Arts, Friends of the Philharmonic, Friends of the Historic House, Friends of, mm-hmm. and it was always, you know, we had a, because we had farms, we always had trucks. And so I was always, oh, Steve will come pick that up, or Steve will do that. And I think the positive reinforcement of, you know, every time you do a good deed, you know, an elderly, you know, or an adult gives you praise and accolades, it reinforces that behavior. So you want to keep doing it more and more and more. Mm-hmm. And that's why I like to really get high school kids, you know, kids in high school involved with philanthropy. Because once they get the positive reinforcements, they're more likely to stay with it. Because a lot of times, you know, once you become married and have your own kids, if you're not already involved in something or have passion, you know, you're dropping the kids off at soccer practice, going to church, doing things like that, and philanthropy kind of gets a second seat there.
So talk to me a little bit about some of the projects between 1993, right, mm-hmm. and today. Some of the major projects that you've been involved with.
Well, I think one of the things that, you know, our club wins the most on, and actually what I was doing before I joined Rotary, was the Doc in the Box. I think president of the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society in 2004 or 2005, and we were trying to raise money for things, and I'd had some wine, and so I started a little thing called the Bacchus Society, and now it's an international Bacchus Society, but it was basically we got together once a month and we raised money for charity, and we'd get wine donated, and everybody would pay five, you know, back then you'd pay $5 or $10, and you'd come and drink wine, and the charity would take the money. Well, one charity approached me, it was called the Africa Project, and they had asked me if, you know, to do a fundraiser for their program. And when I was, and I always did, I always very proud that I do due diligence on anybody I try to help. I want to make sure that they're doing the right thing and they're efficient at how they manage the money. And I'd done some research on an area called Kandla, South Africa. It has the highest concentration of AIDS of anywhere in the world. And so I started reading more and more into it and then found out there's a thing called the Virgin Cure, where a person with AIDS rapes a virgin and they think that it cures the disease that they have. Mm-hmm. And this goes back pre-AIDS. This goes back thousands of years and it's just a horrendous thing. And the time I had nieces that were, you know, 10 and 11, and it just horrified me. And I said, you know, I'm not going to send you guys a check, but I will send you a solution. I said, you know, what would it take to get a counselor in this area to educate people that this doesn't cure AIDS, but there are certain other precautions that you can to do it? And the nonprofit said, you don't understand. This is in the middle of nowhere. These people have huts, and there's no place for anybody to work or live. So I said, well, what if I could change that? And they said, well, that'd be great. So at the time, I was volunteering once a week over at Catella High School, teaching high school kids green building skills, and had been doing research on the trade. Because of the trade deficit with China, there was a lot of used shipping containers. So I approached the teacher and I said, "What if, you know, if I could get the funding, could we get your high school kids to help design an AIDS clinic for Kandla, South Africa?" And he said that would be a great idea. And so that's how Doc in the Box was kind of founded. And so we made one up in 2007. We built this one at Western High School. And it's still being used today in Kandla, South Africa.
Really?
I'm very proud of that program. As a matter of fact, I'm kind of known for to help pay shipping. We had an $8,000 shipping bill. I escaped from, I swam, I bet my friends I could swim from Alcatraz to San Francisco and bet eight friends $1,000 apiece.
Oh.
And 123 minutes and the worst day of my life later, I had raised enough money to ship the container to Africa.
Wow. Okay. So, Doc in a Box. Tell me what that means.
Well, the original was, you know, to do a doc, you know, actually a mobile medical center. And then so after I'd done the AIDS clinic, I was approached by a local dentist who had done mobile dental clinics and asked me to do a shipping container like the Age one to use here locally in Southern California. And I said, okay, let me come look at your operation and things. And I said, you know, that won't work because, the size of the truck you need, and that's more of a permanent application. And I said, but I will design you a mobile dental clinic. And so I used a 20-foot car hauling trailer, enclosed car hauling trailer with a ramp. And I designed it, and then I went back to Western High School, and a gentleman named Jerry Cates, who ran the class, and offered the challenge again. And it was great because we had the kids. I had in my mind what it was supposed to look like, but I let the kids design it. And then they designed a few things wrong, specifically how some of the heavy equipment was supposed to go in the trailer, et cetera. And I said, okay, before we start cutting aluminum, why don't we build a mock-up of what your design is, where the chairs will go, where the dental units will go, where the toolboxes are. And let's load it. Let's test load it 10 times. And so they built one out of wood. And lo and behold, after they tried to lift up the 50-pound toolboxes on the top shelf, they go, maybe we should put those on the bottom shelf and we could put the chairs on the top. And I go, that's a great idea. And so, but it was giving them, they had the ownership, and that it motivated them. And it was really good working with high school kids. And some of them still said, I still get asked for letters of recommendations. And this was, 10 years ago.
All right. So now you have a doc in a box. Where's the doc?
Well, the doc is the doctor's. But the in-a-box kind of theory is more what comes here. Is I try to develop, what I'm doing now is developing programs. And it's more in the box. Because now we have a meals in a box, suits in a box, oral hygiene initiative, cleft project. It's all things that other clubs can do. I'll be the visionary, and I'll work out the bugs and work out all the problems. But then I put it in a turnkey solution. In other words, here's poster templates. Here's a thumb drive with everything about the program, where you buy the things. And so it can be expanded. And I always say to everybody said, did you trademark this? And I go, absolutely not. I said, I want as many clubs to steal my ideas as possible, because the more people doing this, the more underserved we're helping.
Now, is this only Rotary clubs that you're looking to share the projects with?
No, as a matter of fact, I've been meeting with in Newport Beach with the Kiwanis, Lions, the American Legions, working with the Veterans Administration, anybody, a lot of times people have either energy or they might have funds, but they might not know how to do it. How to actually implement a program. And if you make it very simple for them, and like a checklist, if I do everything on this checklist, this will be a successful dental clinic. Or if I do everything on this checklist, this will be a successful vision clinic. And it's working marvelously.
Mm-hmm. All right. So tell me about the dental clinic program. Uh-huh. Talk about that.
Okay. Well, this is another thing where we utilize students and we teach them philanthropy. So I was just honored to become president of the USC dental group, AUDA. And I am not a dentist, so I think I'm the first president who's not a dentist. But we get approximately 70 volunteers a month, and we will go do a different clinic in a needy area. We usually partner with a Rotary Club. It'll either be at a senior center or an elementary school, or it'd be at a risk center, like maybe the Ronald McDonald House, a place called Home in Los Angeles. But we do about $1 million worth of free dental and vision in Southern California per year in the neediest locations. And a lot of people don't think there's need. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of need.
So you with your box on wheels, mm-hmm. with your trailer,
right.
You take the dental equipment. Mm-hmm. And now are all these dentists that come with you?
Yeah. So perfect example, we'll just use Placentia Rotary Club. So what we'll do is we'll get a partnership with them. It cost us about $4,000 to do about $50,000 worth of free dental. When you think insurance, supplies, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll get a partner Rotary Club. And then we will have the pre-made flyers that will say, we'll take Placentia. So we'll on the flyer, we'll just put input Placentia Rotary Club and where they meet, the address and the time. And so it helps promote their club. And then we'll give them the flyers, say, it's up to you to give us the patients. So you pay the supplies and you do the patients. We'll take care of everything else. And then so we show up at 6 o'clock in the morning. The trailer, the volunteer, the trailer shows up at 6. The volunteers arrive at 6:30. Then it's usually about 70 USC dental students between first, second, third, and fourth year. And each year you're allowed to do more. So first year you can help set up equipment, wipe it down, sterilize equipment, things like that. Second year you can assist. Third, you can do what we call drill or fill. You're, by the third year, you should be able to do everything. But this gives them so much more real-time experience. And so our volunteers are always the one that win all the awards up at USC because they've got so much time. And then so we'll do 10 local clinics that do about $1 million. And then once a year we'll partner with a Rotary Club in a third world country, and we'll take the 40 or 50 that have volunteered the most hours. Then they win the right. They earn the right to pay their own way to go on the international clinic. So last year we went to India, and then we also took Rotarians with us, and you as a Rotarian know the importance of the polio vaccinations. Mm-hmm. And so we took a whole bunch of volunteers with us to do dental, and then I wanted my students to have a chance to do polio vaccinations before we cure it. And so it was a real, you know, big bucket list for me. Then last year we went to Thailand, the year before Guatemala. We pick a place in need and also where we can get Rotary sport. Mm-hmm. I don't want to go out of the country without having a partner that can help us if we need problems with the government, the Ministry of Health, or just a doctor in an emergency room.
So where have been the locations in Orange County that you've...
Okay, so we partner, I can just go through the year.
Sure.
So September, we're always at a place called Home. That's up in the worst part of Los Angeles. October, one of the reasons I got involved, in October we're always at Orangewood. And so that's a home for foster youth, and I've been on the board for over a decade. So it's I said when we built the new Orangewood Academy that I'll make sure that every kid who walks through the door will get free glasses and free dental for as long as I'm alive. Mm-hmm. And so far we're in this is the fifth year we're there. Or fourth year. This will be the fourth year since they built the academy. So that's October. November, we're at Laguna Niguel, an elementary school in Laguna Niguel. That's November. December, we always go down to Rosarito, Mexico. The students pay their own way. We go down there for 3 days at Lincoln Elementary and do a three-day clinic down there. It's the first 3 days of their Christmas break, which is pretty amazing that they want to take off time from their Christmas break where they could be at home with their families. But there's a waiting list to go on that clinic.
Oh, really? From USC dental students?
Yeah. And then January, we're in Corona at Eastvale. February, we're in Fullerton at Jonas Salk Elementary School. March, we go up to Tarabella, we didn't go there. We're back in Fullerton. Then April, we do our international trip. And then May, it always falls on my birthday, but we always go up to a place called Tarabella. It's about one of the poorest cities. It's a very agricultural city. It's the poorest city in California. So we've been going up there for about 8 years now since we started the program. And what's great is because we've been there so long, they now have to bus students in from other schools.
So primarily, are you serving students, adults?
We don't turn anybody away. And I've actually been, you know, I was up there at one point and a volunteer said, "Are you sure all these kids are legal?" And I said, "Well, why don't you pick out the child you don't want me to take out of pain and we'll pull them out of line." And the person apologized to me after that.
So these are people who have not had access to dental care.
Right. And sometimes people say, "Well, you know, there's money in the system for that. You don't need to offer those services." Well, there's money in the services maybe Monday through Friday if the parent can take off a day's work. And a lot of the people we serve, if they have a choice of getting their child out of pain or paying their rent for that month to keep the roof over the other kids' heads, they're going to keep the roof over the other kids' heads.
Right.
And that's
right.
Usually the people we serve that are just one paycheck away from being homeless.
Wow. Wow, this is really incredible. This is really incredible, Steve. So let's stick around here and take a break now, and then we'll come back and talk a little bit about one or two of the other projects that you're involved with and how you structure your time to be able to do this. All right?
Okay, great.
Well, we'll be right back after these messages.
Hi, it's time for another tip from Sandler Training. Traditional sales training teaches techniques on how to eliminate stalls and objections. Some are fancy sales moves, while others are programmed responses. Sales is a conversation, and I don't know how you can memorize every possible response for every sales situation. Also, the prospect has usually heard these responses before and has been turned off by some fancy sales move. When you really think about it, the only person qualified to address the stall or objection is the prospect. Ask the right questions, and you will eliminate stalls and objections. And that's another tip from Sandler Training, finding power through reinforcement.
All right, back to Will and his guest.
Welcome back to the Pilgrim on the 405. We're talking with Steve Bender, one of Orange County's very powerful and very effective philanthropists, and not just because we're writing checks, but because we're actually creating projects and encouraging other people to follow along and serve the needs of some of the neediest in Orange County and throughout the world. So, Steve, we talked a little bit about Doc in the Box and the dental clinics. Talk about Meals in the Box and how you are involved with feeding some of the hungry veterans out here.
Yeah, it's amazing that I learned a few years ago that there's 3,500 homeless veterans in Orange County. And I just think homeless and veterans should not be used in the same sentence or paragraph. So I was trying to find it once again, instead of sending a check, finding a solution. So I started Meals in a Box, where we get different organizations to challenge each other or whatever, and raise money, not just during the holidays. I say veterans are hungry. They eat food year round. But we always seem to take care of the needy in the holidays, and that's what gives us, you know, our great sense of satisfaction. But they are hungry 12 months out of the year. So I try to do different programs that spread that out so we don't overload their food banks, but we just give them something every month and that we help.
Okay, so how are you distributing this food?
So we have a couple great volunteers in our club. We call them Tom and Jerry, but they basically, I recruited them into our club just to run this program, and they're both ex-military. They were their board of directors for the Marine 1-1, and I told them my idea, and I said, you know, I can set this up, I can challenge other Rotary clubs to do it, but I need somebody to pick up the food, take the food, and make it all work. And they've been great at that. A lot of times that's what I do. I can come up with the vision and the program, but if you don't have anybody to implement it and follow up on it and manage it, it fails.
Now, let's talk a little bit about Rotary Club, because mm-hmm. I get the feeling that a lot of people think that Rotary is really a bunch of old men and women sitting around drinking coffee, maybe having a lunch or breakfast, and never doing anything.
Right.
But that's not the Rotary Club that I hear you talking about.
No. I mean, our motto is service above self, and we do a lot of projects, and we basically have it in a we call them our Rotary's areas of focus, and that's peace and conflict prevention, disease prevention and treatment, water and sanitation, maternal and child health, basic education, literacy, and economic and community development. Most clubs do maybe one or two of these. Our club has a project in all of the areas of focus. But it isn't the old boys club like you used to think about. And there's a lot of different aspects of Rotary. The Interact is a high school-based Rotary, which is free for people up to 18. And then there's a Rotaract, which I founded the Rotaract at Newport Beach Sunrise, which is a community Rotaract club of members, about 70 members from 18 to 30. And it's no cost to them, but again, they have to do service projects. And pretty much all of my dental students are in Rotaract because that helps them with, we give them some nice scrubs to wear that are really cool that says that they're the top of the class and things like that. But a lot of we just won an award at the district conference from our innovation for our new award, a new type of Rotary that we implemented in our club called the Associate Program. And where I was finding a lot of the older guys, like you say, they have the treasure, but they might be, not be able to stand up for 12 hours and do a dental clinic, or, you know, or the talent to do an extraction. So I think everybody has either time, treasure, talent, and you just got to find out, you know, what would you like to offer? So this new associate membership, I don't recruit them until they're already doing a project for us, and we ask them to do 12 hours of community service quarter, which isn't a lot. And that is their meetings, where they don't go to a structured morning breakfast, lunch, or dinner meeting like we do. They do their hours actually in the field. And that's a lot better to people, young professionals in their 40s to say 60s, because they say, oh, I'd like to go to Mexico and help build a house, or I'd like to, you know, apply fluoride to a teeth in an orphanage, but I don't have, I have to take my kids to school, so I can't come to breakfast at 7:30 every morning at the Five Crowns, or every Tuesday.
Yeah. Well, all right. So now it sounds to me like, I mean, at least my experience with Rotary is we have a lot of local projects, and we also have some major international projects, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
I mean, Rotary was one of the first groups to dedicate themselves to eradicating polio,
yeah,
right?
The only group. And actually, they, in 1985, they decided they were going to, that was going to be a goal of the 1.2 million members worldwide to eradicate the disease. And in 1985, there were 1,000 cases of polio per day. Now I think we've had 5 this year. And it is estimated that we will eradicate it in the next several years. There's just a few cases in Pakistan and a few cases in Afghanistan. And I think one just popped up again in Africa. But it isn't, we are going to get this done.
And this has been a concerted effort every year by this group of people.
Yes.
And
yes,
it's a worldwide project.
Yes. And we've raised billions with a B. So, and there's a lot of really good people. There's a gentleman in our district who matched, our club raised $2,700. He matched it. So that took it to 52. And then the Bill and Linda Gates Foundation, they double it. So from a donation of $2,600 from our, or $2,700 from our club, it turned in over $10,000 through matching programs. And that's what's great about Rotary. They've got a lot of ways to help you leverage your donations.
And I understand that Rotary clubs do a lot of projects to raise money, mm-hmm. and then almost all of that money gets dispersed back out into other projects.
Yes, yes. We have ongoing probably 12 or 15 projects going on, some that you're heavily involved in, and there's something for everybody.
Mm-hmm. So how would people get involved in helping with projects like this?
You know, the best thing to do is, you know, to come to a Rotary meeting and to see if you like it, and, you know, I don't have to plug this. We meet every Tuesday morning at the Five Crowns in Corona Del Mar. But there's Rotary clubs worldwide. You can go on a Rotary website and just plug it in and find out where your club meets. And, you know, my recommendation to people is go to a couple clubs. We have 3 clubs in Newport Beach, and there's something for everybody. You know, we have a breakfast club, then there's a lunch club at Newport Irvine, and there's a dinner club at Newport Balboa. And they're all great clubs with great people doing great projects. And the best thing to do is maybe go to a couple.
Well, tell me let's talk a little bit about what people can expect if they were to come to a Rotary Club. I mean, they certainly get on the website and find where Rotary Clubs meet. And what, when we talk about Rotary, we're really talking about fellowship. We're talking about projects and service, and we're talking about making significant changes. Mm-hmm. So what do we expect? And what can people expect when they show up at a Rotary Club?
Well, we usually have, you know, kind of a set. The morning club or the normal clubs have a kind of a set structure, you know, where it is like the, you know, it's been going on the same way. We do the Pledge of Allegiance. We have a song, an inspirational moment. And then we always usually have a good speaker. And I think that's what really helps the club is could make the difference between a good club and a bad club. If you have really engaged speakers, you know, then members want to come. If you leave that meeting going, wow, I've learned something, I'm better today because of this, for this speaker. And that's what we try to stress.
And now these speakers are people who will inspire people to do projects and to serve?
It could be everything. You know, this morning we had a judge from the drug court, and he was amazing. But we've had, like, people from the medical industry talking about Alzheimer's. I went to another club, and it was talking about why you shouldn't multitask, why it's bad for your brain. And so I'll go to other clubs a lot and to other speakers, and it's a very good camaraderie. If you're a Rotarian in one club, you're allowed to go anywhere in the world. And I've made everywhere I go in the world, I always email the president of a Rotary club. I just came back from Antibes, France, and I had the president pick me up from the airport and entertain me for 4 days.
Wow.
But you have friends wherever you go. I always joke, always get on an airplane or go, when you travel, wear your Rotary pin.
Well, now, tell me a little bit about you talked about being innovative in terms of membership. So mm-hmm. Talk about what the club has been doing.
Well, we've given away about $40,000 in grants, you know, ranging from $1,000 to $4,000 on projects. And when I became president 2 years ago, I said, we really need to have more strategic partnerships, and we need to have liaisons in the places that we do. Let's just not send a check, but let's work on a partnership where we can actually improve this program, not necessarily throwing money at it, but by working together with the wisdom of the people in our club and our strategic partners, say the C-Base or Working Wardrobes or something like that. We have a base in our club of, lawyers, business professionals, things like that, or it's a wealth of knowledge. You can come. I joked last year. I said, you can come have breakfast for $20 with a guy who charged you $400 an hour to talk to, and he'll give you advice for free. And a lot of people don't understand that, but I do, and I appreciate the members in our club. And most clubs are that way. They're diversified. They don't want to have all bankers, all real estate people, all lawyers. So for the most part, there's no more than three people of any one classification in a Rotary club. Because we try to stay diversified.
Okay, so tell me, you've just completed your 2 years of being the president of the Newport Beach Sunrise Rotary Club. So tell the audience a little bit about what you're going to be doing in the next couple of weeks.
Well, this will be my first vacation I've taken in about 10 years without 40 students. So I actually leave on the 4th of July. I'm going to go to Spain. And I'm going to run with the bulls on the 10th.
Run with the bulls. Yes. Tell me about what that means.
Well, it's something I think it started about 1859, and it was a way to move six bulls from one area to the arena. And so it started as that. And so it's a half-a-mile run. A bull can run about 30 miles an hour. I can run about 12. So I think I'll get a little head start. But it's just one of my bucket list things. I try to knock things off my bucket list every year.
So you're going to run how far?
It's a half mile.
A half a mile.
A half a mile. So,
and you have to stay out ahead of the bulls.
You stay ahead of the bulls. And you know, with the power of the internet, I've actually been taking an online course on how to run with the bulls.
Run with the bulls.
It's a 10-week course.
A 10-week course.
They said, $50, it's worth every penny. But they said the first video they send you, the first week, pretty much eliminates most people from going on with this. Because it's pretty gory. It shows a guy getting thrown in the air multiple times. Oh. And he says, and then the second one is, okay, you're on the second one.
You can handle it.
You can handle this. Okay. So, and it starts talking about strategy and, where most accidents happen, how to run to the corners, how there's certain areas that might be a venturi where, it clogs up and you do not want to be in the center of that when the bulls are running. Because okay. That is, you will get gored if you're there. Never to go against a wall. Always, if you're going to slow down, get by a fence so you can run over it. Because you do not want to be in between a bull and a wall.
So tell me, the reason for putting yourself into this jeopardy is?
if you're not living, you're not living.
All right. So we finish up safely with the bulls, and then what's next?
Then I fly over to Portugal and swim with the sharks.
Swim with the sharks. So, not that in Orange County we've never swum with sharks.
Yeah, right? I was going to say, I'm pretty wild.
even the land sharks.
You know, that's what I was talking about. I've never seen one in the water.
So talk about what this experience of swimming with the sharks is going to be.
So it's pretty great. I'm a master diver, so I've attained the highest level. You know, I've done the rescue.
Was this another $50 instruction to?
No. That's long and drawn out. I've been diving for many years. I actually did the first underwater Bertles and James commercial off of St. Croix back in the 80s. But I love diving. It's a big passion to me. And I've actually started an organization called Diving Doctors. And that's part of our group. We're going to Phuket, which is Patong Hospital, next year. And so what we'll do is the volunteers will work for 4 days and then dive for 4 days. And so it's a great, there's a lot of doctors that dive. And so I found out if you offer them a little care at the end of the trip, they're more likely to, they're more likely to volunteer to go work, you know, 4 days, 16-hour days in 110-degree
very good
temperature.
All right, so when you come back now, you will be the director of the international?
Yeah, what we call it, it's called the chair.
The chair
of the international projects for 45 clubs. So what I'll do is I'll coordinate everybody's international projects, and I've got some ideas to make it a little different, you know, with technology and Google Docs and things where we can coordinate our efforts. There's a lot of us that are doing the same thing, but we might not be doing it the most efficient way possible. You know, maybe 50% of the clubs might be doing water projects. Well, technology changes, as you well know, every year. Is every club up to date on water projects? And so I've recruited a water guru. That's all he does.
So these international projects, when you talk about water, this could be a project where a Rotary Club in a foreign country wants to establish clean water or create access to water.
Right. More children die per year to waterborne illnesses than anything else. And we can talk about AIDS or whatever, but I think it's 3.3 million children die per year for waterborne illnesses. So one of the best things, and Rotary realizes this, and that's why it's one of their areas of focus, is one of the, and I won't do a dental clinic in a city that hasn't taken care of their water first. You know, if you're not giving your children good water, there's no reason.
We're not going to Flint, Michigan.
Yeah, we're not. Well, we're I'm not going to say that. We're just, that should be your number one priority. And so Rotary works, it's called WASHRAG, Water Action Rotary Action Group. But it specializes in digging wells and helping. Some places have good access to water, so there we would just do purification. Our club sponsored a project in Peru last year, Guatemala this year. You know, if you have clear water, then you can grow plants and you can do everything. But the water is the key to everything. So that's probably after polio, that'll be their next big push.
All right. So talk to me about what are the things that people... How can people get involved with the projects you're talking about? I mean, if they said, yeah, okay, maybe I'll go and put up with Rotary. What does that mean in terms of how they're going to affect change in the world?
Well, I think, you know, it is what you make out of it. You know, if you want to succeed, or if you want to do a project, you don't just join Rotary and you're doing projects. You have to want to do it, and that all the clubs have a good projects. But, you know, you just have to reach out and find your passion. You know, my favorite Saturday of the week is when I wake up at, you know, 4 o'clock and go do free dental.
So talk to me a little bit about how you, as a business person, how do you structure your resources, your time, and your money? How do you do that?
It's not easy. And, you know, fortunately, I grew up on a farm in Kansas, so I don't have the Newport Beach mentality where you're trying to keep up with the Joneses. You know, I've never had the flashy car or the jewelries or anything like that. And I like the humble lifestyle. And so that helps. But, yeah, you still have to make a living, and you have to find balance in your time. And that's just, you know, asset allocation of time management, you know, and I sometimes take on more projects than I need. I'm actually on 12 nonprofit boards right now, and I'm trying to drop that by 50% next year, but I'm not doing the best job.
So this is really has to do with beginning with what I want. I don't see you waiting until you have the time or the resources to address some of these projects. Your desire is to do that, and therefore you structure your time and your resources in order to be able to do that.
Yes.
So the real question is helping people get in touch with what they want.
Mm-hmm.
So what would you say to people about getting in touch with what they want in terms of helping other people?
Well, I think you've got to find your passion. And is it helping children? Is it helping seniors? Is it a medical? Is it environmental? Is it water? Is it, you know, there's a gazillion things. And the best thing to do is look at the six areas of focus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's, you know, peace and conflict resolution, you know, stopping bullying at high school, literacy. Do you want to read? You know, there's, it's unlimited of what you can do. You've just got to find something you enjoy to do, because once you, if you enjoy it, it's not work. And I mean, I'd rather be doing something than watching TV, or I always say, you know, philanthropy is my golf. I'd rather work, I'd rather volunteer on a Saturday than play golf on a Saturday.
Do you find that that gives you satisfaction?
More so than anything else I do. I get very bored very quickly if I'm not volunteering. And make no mistake, there's a couple times, there's a couple Sundays where I wake up and I go, I have absolutely nothing to do today, and it's not bad.
So now we saw the special award that was given to you at the district level. So tell us a little bit about that award.
Well, they made up one different special for me this year, and it was the Energy Bunny Award. Mm-hmm. Because they and I forget that what was on the plaque, but it was for my innovation and energy and things like
so
that.
You are the Energizer Bunny.
I'm trying to have that not stick. Yeah, the Facebook comments, and I think he's ever ready to do stuff. Yeah, it's that's not what I want to be known for, but you know.
Well, super. That's wonderful. So, are there any significant projects that you are looking forward to in the next year?
Yeah, you know, one of the things I'm working on a project now called the Oral Hygiene Initiative, and it's something I really want to spend some time on. About 5 years ago, I was doing a dental clinic in Mexico, and I noticed that to raise money for books, they sell sodas and candy on campus, and kids aren't brushing their teeth, and we're doing extractions on kids in fifth grade. That should never happen. And these are their permanent teeth. Once you pull them, they're gone. And so I started working together on a program called the Oral Hygiene Initiative on how to educate, not extract. And so that's what I'm going to be focusing heavily on. There's 63 elementary schools in Rosarita, and I'm working with the two Rotary clubs down there. And an amazing, my executive director, her name is Jennifer Stone. She graduated from USC Dental, and now is a hygienist, and now she is going to dental school in Arizona. But she's put together kind of a dream team of dental hygiene and professionals on how to do programs on, you know, educational programs. And the goal is to say, okay, maybe from kindergarten, first, second grade, to give them free toothbrushes and toothpaste and a fluoride varnish every 6 months for 3 years. This isn't, you know, this isn't a small task, and it takes the whole city, and I'm working with everybody down there to get it done. But we could literally, in several years, lower tooth decay and cavities in an entire city by 50%. So that's a big goal of mine that I'm going to be working a lot more on now that I've got about 20 extra free hours on my hands a week.
Well, if somebody wanted to help you with that, what would you suggest they do?
Contact me.
And how would they do that?
Email steve@stevebender.net. Pretty simple. And another project that we're involved with that our Rotary Club's heavily into, I think you know I was asked to be the chair of the Special Olympics Host Town Committee several years ago. And I discovered that they dropped sailing from Special Olympics due to budget cuts. And once again, I look around Newport Beach at the multi-million-dollar boats and said, you know, I think that's kind of embarrassing. So between our club and some other grants and some donors, we've purchased two specially designed sailboats that actually can take a quadriplegic out sailing. And one of our members in our club is actually a quadriplegic, and she was in a race in San Francisco a couple of weeks ago, and she came in second place racing against an able-bodied person. Now, this is a person who is a quadriplegic, but to see the look on her face when she's sailing. She was an ex-Disneyland dancer, and she goes, it's like dancing on water. And the feeling you get when you see her, it's a feeling you could never explain unless you've seen it, helping someone like that. We take a lot of things we have, our health specifically, for granted. But when you work with people who don't have the same luck or the advantages we have, you want to help them.
Good. So, again, if somebody said, gee, this sounds like somebody I want to get in touch with, or this is a project I want to participate in, what would they do?
You just contact me, email me, steve@stevebender.net. I'm pretty accessible. You know me. I answer my emails twice a day.
And over the next week, we should probably use Spanish, right? Good. Well, this is wonderful, Steve. I'm so glad that you took a little break from all the projects that you have in between saying goodbye to your presidency at Newport Beach Sunrise Rotary Club and getting ready to take off to run with the bulls and swim with the sharks. So we look forward to lots of big projects and lots of fun together in the next couple of years.
Well, thanks so much for having me. I'd love to come back maybe next year and tell you how the projects are doing.
Absolutely. So thank you very much. This is the Pilgrim on the 405 wishing you all to have a great time and help those businesses in California thrive.
You've been listening to the Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. To hear more of the programs in this podcast, go to www.willcrist.com.